Welcome to the podcast where we're both mentally ill and running on no sleep. Just kidding. I got a lot of sleep last night. I think my issue today is that I'm over caffeinated, and your issue is that you're under caffeinated and sleep deprived.
My issue is that I'm sick again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a rough week health-wise for Audrey.
I'm half asleep right now. It is 9:30. I'm usually up. I was up till 3 a.m. last night doing a puzzle because I'm a maniac. And then I woke up at 4:30.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that because it is maniac behavior.
Yeah. So this week's episode's a little different because I was feeling lazy.
Well, since I'm a student again, my days are filled with trying really hard not to fall asleep all the time and doing homework and going to class. So it's not so much, well, I mean, maybe halfway lazy, but also halfway just busy. But we did it. Okay, so basically what's happening this week is both Audrey and I are going to be doing a case, but they're going to be short cases. So it's a two for one.
So like the first episode we ever did together was a two for one.
Yes, exactly. Which I actually really love this. And I'm very excited about this because I feel like you get a little bit of both of us, you know? Like, yeah. I enjoy it because it's not like one of us has the full load of having to do a complete podcast episode. Not that we're half-assing this, because we're not. But, I mean, well, maybe I half-assed it a little bit, but.
No, it's more or less, like, I guess my logic this week is, like, the case that I did is a paranormal case. And it's one that I've been wanting to do, but paranormal cases don't always have the same information or the same amount of information that true crime does. And so this one's only, like, a page and a half of information, whereas we usually have like between 4 and 7 pages. And so mm-hmm. I was like, I can't do a whole episode on this. You know, with as much information as I have, it's less than a page and a half. And it's not because we didn't put the effort in. It's just because the case itself is, there's not a whole lot of information going on there.
Exactly. But I think it'll still be good. I'm excited for it. I have no idea what you're doing. You have no idea what I'm doing. All right. So I'll just get into it. Today we're going to be talking about Michael G. Schiller. Do you know this?
Yes!
No, you're joking me.
I am joking.
Are you serious?
I have no fucking clue
what
this
is. I was going to say, this literally, okay, the only way that I found this was because I went onto a website that I've used before. It's called Historical Crime Detective. they basically cover like really small cases from like the early 1900s. And so all of the information that I got is from this website. It literally doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. I tried looking for it outside of this website. All I could find was the original, like, document of this person, the state of Ohio versus Schiller, and it didn't
really
even give me
like
any
the court
extra
transcript.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
I like reading those because sometimes they're funny.
Yeah. But all of the information that was in that document, in that transcript, is already in this article. So Michael G. Schiller was an Austro-Hungarian man who was a saloon owner and was convicted of killing his wife, Mary. This is also different because we're starting off with his crime and then going in with the aftermath of what happened and not going into, like, what his crime was, which I think is interesting.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. He was illiterate, but had gotten a bit of fortune through what the article describes as economy and thrift. Which
what
I have
the fuck
no
does
idea.
That mean?
I tried so hard to try to interpret what that could have meant. And I thought originally maybe that it was like he was like a shifty little guy and he was just a thief. But
yeah.
I
or is
really
it like
have
his taxes or
right. I have no idea what they mean by that. So I just decided to put it
my
in
man
full
said
quotes.
Tax fraud. He ran with it.
Yeah, yeah. He gruesomely murdered his wife on June 1st, 1903 by slicing her stomach open. She had divorced him and took custody of their 3 children. He was drunk, and it also explained earlier that he lost his fortune from whatever means because he was an alcoholic, basically. So one night he was drunk and he went to her house and demanded that they continue to be married or he was going to cut her heart out.
Jesus Christ.
Very understanding guy, as you can tell.
Yeah, not toxic at all.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Mm-mm. Trophy husband, if you ask me. My kind of guy.
You want to date this guy? I want a thief and a drunkard.
Who's going to cut my heart out.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, guys. Please don't. I'm sorry. Continue.
Her standards are way better than this.
Okay? They are.
He also wanted more money from her, and I wrote in my own writing, I'm assuming from the settlement, or if it's not from that, then she was giving him money for something, and she refused to give him any more. But she obviously did not comply and ran into the backyard to call for help. So they had gotten into a scuffle, and she ran to the backyard to call for help, but Michael grabbed her and stabbed her in the stomach with a butcher's knife.
Ow!
She went to the hospital and ended up dying 5 days later, but not before telling the police about the details of the crime.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And there were a few witnesses of the crime, and he was quickly arrested because he's a dumbass and decided to kill her in front of all of his neighbors and multiple witnesses.
Nice. So it wasn't even like a fenced-in yard or no?
It was just out in the open.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yep. Way to go, guy. Starting off on a great foot. Before his wife passed away, she sent money to her family in Hungary, and the 2020 equivalent of this sum would be $112,000.
Okay.
I think it said in the article that it was around $4,000 for the time that she sent back to her family.
Where did you say this took place again?
This was in Ohio.
Okay.
I didn't get to that yet, but yeah, this happened in Ohio.
Okay.
And she had planned to move her children back there and give them a good education before she was murdered. His children were very afraid of him. When he was arrested, shocking, right? His children were placed into orphanages, but they were not able to be adopted because he refused to relinquish his parental rights. He thought
they should
that
have
maybe...
just fucking taken them away. Sorry.
I mean, they did take them away, but he, I guess because he was still alive and he was sentenced to, he was in prison, that he didn't necessarily have to give up his rights yet. I don't know if maybe the laws were different back then.
They probably were. I can't imagine.
I don't know
that.
What happened. Right. Because you would think that if your
the government didn't give a fuck about
that.
Kids back then. Are you kidding me? Government didn't give a fuck about anyone except for straight white men back then. I said what
Seriously.
I said.
Seriously. No, it's the truth. They were not able to be adopted because he would not relinquish his parental rights. He thought that maybe his children would be his key out of his sentencing, which I'll go into a little bit later in like two sentences. He had two sons, Gustave, who was 8, and Fred, who was 4, as well as a daughter named Minnie, who was 12. He asked his daughter Minnie to talk to the governor for him, thinking the governor would not be able to say no to a little girl, but she refused, as she should. So he basically asked her to go to the governor and see if he could change the sentencing, because he was originally sentenced to death by electric chair, and he was hoping that maybe he can get life in prison if his daughter talked to the governor, but she didn't want to do that because she was afraid of him, and she was afraid that if he eventually ever got out, that he would go and get her eventually.
Hurt her, yeah.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
Queen behavior. True. So, he was sentenced to die on June 17th, 1904, by electric chair. During this time, there hadn't been many electrocutions at the annex, which was the death row in Ohio, I guess, in the area where he was. They called it the annex.
Okay.
And he was the 13th prisoner to be electrocuted. All the previous deaths had been successful, so the electrician and the warden were certain that this electrocution would also go off without a hitch. They tested the equipment several times and made sure the generators were in working condition, working order. He could hear them testing the chair from his prison cell, and he started to grow very nervous, and he even prayed that in the last minute the sentencing would change to life in prison instead of execution. Okay. Which, my guy, I don't know what you think would happen in a matter of, like, half an hour that would be changing your entire sentencing.
Yeah, and if anybody's gonna change that for you, it's not God, because God does not help people who murder their wives.
No. God has betrayed you. You are alone.
God betrayed him for a good reason, though. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Schiller also refused to get counsel from religious advisors and even refused a drink of whiskey, which I find surprising because this guy was a fucking alcoholic. Yeah, and he also barely touched his last meal. At around 11:30 p.m., the prison barber came in to prepare him for dying.
Wait, the prison barber?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Hair barber?
Yes. Yeah.
Why?
Because he was dying by electrocution, they had to put electrodes on his head, so they had to shave him. Yeah. Okay. One of the guards told him, "Well, Mike, it's time to prepare for this unpleasant ordeal," and then motioned for him to sit in a stool so the barber could shave his head, which I love, personally, because I imagine this guard, who has seen at least 12 electrocutions by now, mm-hmm. and probably more deaths, he's been through this before, and he's just like, "Well, time to die, my friend. Seriously. Sit on the chair, shave your head." Once his head was shaved was when he had finally realized what was actually happening. It's kind of when he lost hope and was like, mm-hmm. My sentence is not going to change. No one's going to come and save me. I'm dying today. So while his head was being shaved, the electrician and his assistant did a final check of the chair and said that everything was in working order. So the chair was fine. Everything was working the way it should. At 12 a.m., Michael was brought into the room and around 40 men surrounded the chair. He was put into the chair and straps were tightened around his wrists. Electrodes were put on his freshly bald head and on his leg. I'm pretty sure they said on his calf. Mm-hmm. And the room was dead silent. No pun intended.
Haha, but
I'm hilarious. The warden, Edward Hershey, asked Michael G. Schiller if he had any last words to say, and he tried to speak, but no sound came out. Edward then pulled the lever, and 1,750 volts of electricity went coursing through his body. And this jolt lasted for about 7 seconds before the voltage was reduced to 250 volts for another minute. The chief physician of the prison, Dr. Thomas, checked over the body and pronounced him dead. I'm pretty sure that there was more than one physician. Like, I think Dr. Thomas was the main guy, and mm-hmm. then there were a couple other physicians just to kind of double check and make sure that he was dead. Mm-hmm. The witnesses and the prison staff all started to leave the room, and the guards began to lay the body on the ground to prepare it for whatever the next step is, yep. I guess. When the body was laid on the ground, a sound came out of his mouth and a gurgling came from the throat. This scared the shit out of the guards because they had never seen this happen before. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported on the incident, stating he was straightened up in the chair and he began to breathe heavily. So in the article, it said that he was on the ground. Based on the Cincinnati Inquirer, he was still in the chair when this is happening. Saliva was falling from the mouth and guttural groans sounded through the chamber, chilling the strongest men to the very heart. Schiller seemed to be regaining consciousness. At one time, he appeared to throw back his head as if making a desperate effort to talk.
No.
The sight was absolutely sickening. Spectators expected to see him recover.
I don't like that. That's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, I just got chills. Like, not good chills. Like, heebs. I got the heebs from that.
It's so insane. Can you imagine you just watched someone get electrocuted? You saw someone pronounce them dead. And then they start to just, like, these, like, I assume they're just very unnatural sounding, like, groans coming from them.
I don't know. I don't know why that's, like, grossing me out. I talk about the most morbid fucking shit, and this is what gets me. Is there more?
I'm not gonna lie. I'm kind of love. Yeah, there's more.
Oh, God.
Oh, there's more, baby. Oh,
fuck you. Okay.
Unfortunately, he would not be able to recover because the death warrants state that the guy must die, so they had to set the chair back up again and try again. By the time the chair was set back up, he was already breathing normally, so he, like, basically came back to life.
Bye. Bye. I'm done. Good night.
But there's more. The warden shocked him again with 1,750 volts of electricity, but this time for 15 seconds instead of 7 seconds, before reducing it to 250 volts for the remaining minute. The doctors made a thorough inspection and examined the body for 12 minutes before pronouncing him dead again. They all declared that he was dead beyond a shadow of a doubt. The crowd left again, and the body was taken out of the chair and laid on the ground again, and a sheet was placed over the body. To the guard's horror, the groaning sound came out of Schiller's body yet again.
No!
Yes. One of the guards lifted the sheet to see Michael trying to gasp for breath. They summoned the warden again, and they set up the chair, but this time there wasn't a crowd. So, not only did he come back to life once, he came back to life twice.
What is it with these fucking Michaels not dying? Michael Malloy, this fucking guy. I think it's just, like, things that can't be explained by medical science, like biology, stresses me out.
Yeah.
And I've heard of cases like that where people will die and then just, like, randomly come back to life.
Mm-hmm. So, this last time, they increased the voltage, and this time they were certain that no human being would be able to survive it. And this shock actually charred and burned the top of his head because of how strong it was.
Ow, fuck.
Mm-hmm. This time, he did die, and the press had a field day after hearing about the incident. People speculated that he survived the first two shocks because he barely drank water in the days leading up to his execution, but some prisoners speculated that it was because he was the 13th man to die in the chair.
I was wondering about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also wondering if there's like a paranormal thing to it.
I feel like there could be. That's all I have, by the way. That was the end of it.
That was really good. That gave me so much anxiety. That was great.
I'm sorry.
No, it's like when you showed me Hereditary.
Yeah.
That's how I'm feeling right now. I'm mad that you're the only person that can, like, find things that freak me out.
That's how you know we're meant to be best friends.
Well, because you know me better than I know myself. I've watched so many fucking horror movies trying my best to get scared. And Addie comes around the first, no, because we watched that Gretel and Hansel one. That sucked.
Yeah, yeah. But we both agreed that one sucked, though.
Yeah.
Because we both hadn't seen it.
But, literally, she's like, let's watch Hereditary. And I was like, oh, what's that? And I'd never fucking heard of it. And she's like, it'll scare you. I was like, I don't think it will. I was shitting myself.
It's a great movie, though.
It is a really good movie.
If you haven't, if you have, I guess, like, the scare tolerance of Audrey and nothing really scares you, definitely watch Hereditary, because it's beautifully filmed, and it's a great story, and it's scary as hell.
Yeah, it's like if Midsommar just took a even worse turn than it did.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same guy who wrote Midsommar as well.
Oh, really?
Or directed it or something. Yeah, Ari Aster did Midsommar and Hereditary.
Well, look at that. I've learned two new things today. There's another Michael who avoided death when he probably shouldn't. And that guy directed both those movies.
Today's just a day for education.
I will not retain these facts. I'll probably be editing tomorrow and be like, oh, I don't remember talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my story, mine's fucking bonkers bananas. If you're ready to get into it.
I am.
Okay. Do you have nothing left to say about your homeboy over there?
No, he's just a fucking idiot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's all.
Yeah. I don't admire him at all the way that I admire Michael Malloy.
No, yeah. Michael Malloy made me, like, I was kind of rooting for him.
Exactly.
And hoping that he wouldn't ever die and that he would still be alive today. But this guy, I'm like, why didn't you die the first time?
I know.
You're an idiot.
Well, it's like Albert Fish. Like, people were, like, speculating as to why he didn't die.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Real quick, do you have the name of the prison this guy was sentenced?
It says, okay, so it said the annex, and then all it says is, let me double check and see. The annex, the official term used then for Ohio's death row. But let me see if later on, because the way that this article was laid out, they put all of the things about his electrocution first and then everything about his sentencing and his crime and everything after.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I also forgot to mention this, but his wife's name was Mary. I don't know if I said that or not.
I believe you did.
Okay. And they mentioned in the article that not much was written about her life or her death. It just said that what her name was, but I assume based on the fact that she sent money home and wanted to bring her children there, that she cared about her children and, you know, was a good mom. That's all I wanted to say. Oh, she was 38 years old. She was also Hungarian. It says that he was a saloon keeper in Youngstown, which I'm assuming is also in Ohio.
He was at the Ohio Penitentiary.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
So the Ohio Reformatory is haunted.
Oh.
Could have been demon activity.
How old is it?
1870-something.
Oh, okay. So 30-ish years before this guy was there. Yeah.
And they executed people there until, like, 1960-something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so almost 100 years.
Wow.
Anyway, speaking of demons,
ooh,
my story's paranormal.
Oh.
Because I've been wanting to get back into that. Speaking of paranormal, really quick, Mike at Extreme Paranormal just covered my favorite paranormal case, the Amityville house.
Mm-hmm.
And he dedicated, it's a two-part episode. I think it's his first two-part episode, and they're dedicated to us. So shout out to you, Mike. We love you. He also said he wanted to buy us shots of tequila, and I want to make it known I will not survive a shot of tequila. So
I'll take both of them for us.
With that being said, I am going to be talking about Loftus Hall, which is not a person, it's a building.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I okay.
Well, the word hall kind of gave it away to me that it was not a person.
Well, because Hall can be a last name.
Yeah, yeah.
So one thing about this place is there is some like history to it that I just didn't write down because it was boring, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not important to the story. I'll just like throw it in there. So the land itself had started being built at like 1150.
Oh wow.
Yes. A very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was all rebuilt in 1350 by the Redmond family, and they built a mansion along the Hook Peninsula in Ireland.
Okay. What's still a very, very long time ago.
Oh yeah. Yes. Almost 700 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it was along the Hook Peninsula in Ireland, and it was called Redman Hall until the 1650s when the Loftus family took over and named it Loftus Hall. And then basically, at some point, like, this is the boring history that I left out. There was, like, this big war that was going on at some point. They were basically using it as a fort, and mm-hmm. a bunch of people got murdered inside the mansion, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. probably why it's haunted, but not really. I'll get into it.
Okay.
I want you to make fun of this because it's crazy, bonkers, bananas, absolute bullshit.
Okay.
So in 1752, Charles Tottenham became Lord of the Mansion when he married one of the Loftus daughters, Anne.
Okay.
So he was married into the family.
Gotcha.
And that's how he started living there. So the whole Loftus family is living there, and then the Tottenham family is now living there because they had two girls and four boys together. But then Anne died from illness, probably some sort of bacterial infection or, you know, consumption, mm-hmm. when the kids were really young. And 2 years later, Charles married his cousin Jane.
Oh, no.
And we love that.
Not the incest so yes. early on.
Yes. One night in 1775, the Loftus family was away on business, and from what I understood and everything that I read, Charles, Jane, and the kids all still lived there, but then Zach Bagans is like, they hired him to watch the house while they were gone on business. He's like, sir, just because you say it so confidently doesn't necessarily make it true. So, I don't know. I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm just saying...
You ain't calling him a truther?
No, I'm not. Because the way that he lined the story up, none of it matches with anything that I read.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even finish the episode, okay? So, yeah. So, one night in seven... I'm going to read it to you the way that I learned it, not the way Zach wants me to think, okay? So, the Loftus family was away on business, but Charles, Jane, and the kids all stayed back. They did not go on this business outing. And that night, a storm had washed up a ship close to the hall. So, as I said, they lived on this Hook Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very close to the shoreline, like, literally within walking distance of the beach. Like, it was basically a 63-acre lot of beachside property.
Yeah.
And the mansion was, like, right on that peninsula.
Gotcha.
Or is, because it's still there. A young man who had survived the shipwreck found the mansion, surprise, surprise, because there's no fucking trees to hide it, and the Tottenhams invited him to stay. And the storm lasted a while. I heard in some sources that he stayed there for a couple of days because the storm lasted a couple days, and then I mm-hmm. read in some places that he was there for a couple of weeks
mm-hmm.
because he was the only one who had survived the shipwreck. So I don't know. But this young man was a guest in the home for several weeks, and he grew very close with Anne, who was the youngest daughter. So if you remember, Charles married a woman named Anne, and then they named their youngest daughter Anne.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Okay. So, yeah. So her mother's gone, but Jane is her stepmother and great cousin, or first cousin, or second cousin. Gross. It's gross.
Yeah.
Oedipus.
Yes, indeed.
Anyways, yeah, so he grew very close with Anne. They, like, fell in love, the whole shebang, and...
Wait, this was the youngest daughter?
Yes.
How young was she?
She was probably, like, 21.
Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha, yeah. Gotcha. So she was not, like,
she wasn't a child, no.
Gotcha.
No. So one night, Charles, Anne, and this young man were all playing cards together. I think the whole family was. There's a lot of different stories on how this panned out. Sorry, my dog just snorted. But the most common thing that I read was they were all playing cards, and Anne had dropped a card under the table. And so she bent over to pick it up, and when she bent over, she saw that the young man didn't have feet, but cloven hooves instead.
What? Wait. I'm sorry.
So you're going to tell me you're fucking this dude and you don't notice that he has hooves and no legs?
Yeah. No, for real. Like, he's been here how long and you just now notice that he doesn't wear shoes? And okay, my thing, though, as well, is that, like...
Is this the first time he's taken his shoes off?
I'm assuming that, like, he's been walking around the house, right? So, like, do you not hear, like, clip-clop, clip-clop,
no, he just walks around with his shoes on like an asshole, I guess.
And he hasn't taken off... Can you imagine if
he's like, oh, my feet are so sore.
Yeah, like, let me just wear my shoes on 24/7 for several weeks at a time.
Yeah. Oh, his feet must have smelled. I don't know, he must have just gotten to the point he's like, shit, my feet hurt.
I don't care anymore.
my legs are going to be under the table.
I gotta air out the dogs, man.
Right. And then he's like, she's losing her fucking shit, basically, all right? So she's like, what the fuck is this?
My other question is, how do you find shoes that fit hooves?
I was thinking that, and I'm like, maybe he used some sort of, like, glue or some strap that strapped them to his ankle.
He stuffed a bunch of socks in the shoes so that way it would fit.
Right? Yeah, so Anne, like, lost her shit, mm-hmm. And she's like, where the fuck are your legs? What is that? She's screaming, probably crying. Charles is probably losing his shit. And then this young man just super mysteriously reveals that he's the devil in disguise. And to prove he wasn't lying, he turned into a ball of fire and he shot through the roof, followed by a clap of thunder, smoke, and the smell of sulfur.
What? I'm sorry. Huh? Why was he there? Why did he choose there of all places? Also, like, if he's really the devil, then, like, can he really even fall in love?
No, of course not.
So then he was playing her this whole time?
That's, I think,
the biggest shock of all.
To this day, the hole is still in the ceiling. No matter how many times someone tries to fix it, the repair always breaks and falls through.
Whoa. I kind of love that. He said, fuck you guys.
Yep.
And perpetual hole.
For a while.
Why don't you?
every owner of this house tried to fix it, and then one owner fucking gave up, and he's like, you know what? The devil can come and go as he pleases.
I give up.
I was like, yeah, I felt that.
I don't want to deal with the devil right now.
No. I just wouldn't go in that room. I'd be like, you know what, homie? You can have your space. I wouldn't
own this house.
No, I would be like, you know what? House. You want to keep this hole here. You want to keep your fucking portal into my home. Fine. But you are confined to this room. You do not leave this room. You don't go in the rest of my house.
Yeah.
So, because Anne had grown so fond of this young man who turned out to be Satan, she was completely heartbroken and became extremely erratic and depressed.
Hmm. That's a valid reaction to the news that you've just received. Yes.
So her family locked her away in the tapestry room, which is just like what they called it, where she refused to eat, drink, or sleep.
Why is it everyone's reaction like, oh, our daughter's going crazy? Lock her away.
They're like, let's yellow wallpaper this shit.
Yeah.
Also, it's the same concept of solitary confinement.
Yeah.
Where it's so horrible for your mental state, where it's like, obviously, women were not being healed by this when they would do this to women back in the day.
Right.
Yeah. So I read that she was locked in this room for years, and then some sources said it was just for like a couple months. And I want to believe that it was just a couple months, because I don't think that she would have survived a year in those conditions.
Long. Yeah.
Or years, rather. Unfortunately, she did die a couple months after, as I was saying. And after she died, she was buried in a cemetery in Wexford, but local citizens were concerned that the relationship she had with the devil would allow her to escape her coffin or her tomb.
Oh.
So they sealed her tomb with cement.
Oh.
They also didn't want the devil coming back and having access to her tomb.
Mm-hmm.
Loftus Hall had several renovations in the 1860s and 70s. So this is like 100 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the remains of an infant in the walls of the tapestry room.
Wait.
Wouldn't you fucking know?
Hold on a minute. So, wait. From what I understand, then, she was impregnated by the devil.
She was carrying Satan's baby.
And then it just, how did it get in the wall?
It's believed that the family, one, made up the devil visiting them to hide the fact that Anne had gotten pregnant out of wedlock by the visitor and thought it was best to let the baby die.
What the fuck? That's so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
That's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you're more ashamed, that you're so ashamed of your daughter being impregnated out of wedlock that you just decide to kill a baby.
Yep.
And coming up with this whole elaborate thing of, like, the devil impregnated my daughter, so we had to kill it.
There's another theory that, what was it? I didn't write it down because I'm an idiot. Oh, that this young man had asked Charles if he could marry Anne. And Charles said no. And so he kicked the guy out and then went in, realized she was pregnant. That's when they locked her away and they killed the baby and put the baby in the wall. But what I want to believe is that the devil showed up to impregnate this girl.
Uh-huh.
So she would have the devil's son, you know what I mean?
Right, like Antichrist baby.
Yes.
That's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, like, I necessarily believe it because it is super fucking far-fetched. It's just...
But you want to believe it.
Right. You know? There has to be some type of fucking magic in this world.
The hole is still in that ceiling, so...
It literally will not fit. Like, it will not stay fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And also, at one point, I think they just ended up putting, like, really narrow wooden planks in, almost like paint stick size, paint stirring sticks, whatever. But there's one spot where, like, they all look fine, but there's one spot where it's just, like, rotting away.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, dead middle of the hole.
Yeah.
So, it's just fucking strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after this huge, like, renovation, there ended up being 90-something windows and 22 bedrooms and fucking huge extravagant mansion. They definitely like expanded it. And I think a lot of people that not necessarily write articles, but like talk about it or look into this get confused about, because I mean, I don't know, this isn't about the architecture, but I just wanted to clarify because people are like, oh, this doesn't look like a building that was built in the 1650s. Or in the 1350s, rather. It looks like it was something that was built in the 1800s. Well, it technically was built in the 1800s because they basically redid the entire fucking thing. So,
yeah,
there's that. Also, if you know anything, ghosts, spirits, whatever you want to call them, they don't like when you fuck with their shit or renovate or, you know, find the dead babies that they hide in the wall.
They like things to be the way that they remember.
Yeah, no, so you're just disturbing all the peace. At some point, the tapestry room was exorcised, but the exorcism didn't work. It completely backfired, and all it did was trap all of the evil spirits and energy into that room.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Love when that happens.
Yeah, isn't that cute? So the Loftus family began to go bankrupt in the early 1900s, and the house was sold many times. It was a convent and a school for a little while, but too many people were afraid to attend because of the building's history.
Yeah, I would be terrified.
Yeah, especially for like trying to hold religious ceremonies in there and shit. No one's gonna go. Yeah,
doesn't exactly sound like the best place to do that.
Exactly. So in 1983, the hall was purchased by some guy, and he started building it into a hotel. But then the guy died.
Why would you do that?
The guy died in the building.
Of course. Of course he did. You couldn't die anywhere else.
Also, haunted hotels are like a huge attraction. That's why.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense then.
Like New Orleans. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to add to the hauntings.
Basically.
Pass away.
So because no one could seem to keep the building up and running, it was abandoned several times.
Yeah, no, I get that.
It's too big to be a home.
Yeah.
But these people are trying to use it for public service, and nobody wants to go.
Right.
So it just ends up getting abandoned every time someone buys it, unfortunately. So, because that happened, Lotus Hall became the gathering place for Satanist meetings and rituals.
Why am I not surprised at all? They said, oh, Daddy Devil was here? Yeah, let's claim this as our own now. This is mine.
Yeah. So they were there for a couple of years. And the man who bought the hall in 2011, who was the guy who did the episode with Zach Bagans.
Oh.
Yeah. But the man who bought the hall in 2011 said, quote, there isn't a day at Loftus Hall that I don't feel that there is something of someone there with me.
Mm-hmm.
The mansion was open for tours in 2012, but is now closed due to COVID and new ownership in 2021. So, hauntings, I surprisingly couldn't find a whole lot. I was really shocked because it's the most haunted place in Ireland. But then no one's talking about the hauntings.
What happened there?
Yeah, right. And that's why I started watching the Ghost Adventures episode, because I was like, oh, maybe I can write some of this shit down. But then I realized that most of it's like, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I feel like a lot of his shit is fabricated for attention. But also, he has an entire paranormal dedicated museum, so I feel like it's not all bullshit. Like, he has, I'm not saying her name because she's terrifying, never mind.
Okay.
I know there's like truth to his shit, but I also feel like he's just so dramatic.
Yeah. It makes sense though that if it's a TV show about paranormal stuff, like, they've got to hype it up to keep viewership going. So there could be some truth to it, but because it's so dramatic or
it just needs to be dramatized to grab the attention.
Right, right. And that might take away some of the validity of what he's saying.
Yeah. So this is just shit that I found online on different haunting websites. As far back as 1790, a guest who slept in the tapestry room claimed a growling entity jumped into his bed, opened the curtains, and tore the bedding off his bed.
Like a sleep paralysis demon or a regular demon.
It was the devil. Straight up.
Or the devil. Yeah.
He thought maybe someone was fucking with him, but his door was locked.
The devil came in through the roof.
His little portal. Crazy. His hidey hole.
Yeah. His crawl space.
The devil's crawl space. A few years later, a man who was actually the son of the guy I was just talking about.
Yeah.
He witnessed the door open and a woman floated across the room into the wardrobe.
Huh.
Hey, Anne. What you doing, girl?
She's just trying to change her outfit, trying to spruce up.
Seriously. I don't know
who
the fuck
that... Her man's just coming to visit.
I don't know what that growling entity was. That might have been Satan, to be honest, because Anne's pretty harmless. Yeah. Another incident in the tapestry room happened when a man was staying in there. The bed in there is, at the time, I guess, was one of those beds that had the four posts and it had curtains on it.
Yeah.
Like, almost a canopy, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes.
So the curtains to the bed were closed. And a woman dressed in silk opened the curtains and just stood there.
Just trying to get a good look at him.
Yeah. Maybe she thought he was handsome.
I feel like Anne really, like, maybe it would be terrifying because, like, you think you're alone, whatever. But I feel like, I don't know. She's not, like,
trying to
do any harm.
Pretty harmless.
She's just like,
yeah.
Who's in my room? Like, she's probably feeling the same way about you that you are about her. Like, what are you doing here? Get out.
And I'm wondering if it's one of those things where she's not, like, she doesn't know that she's dead.
Yeah. I feel like that.
Yeah.
I mean, her whole experience was pretty shocking. So I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't realize that she was dead, because I feel like in a short time span, there was a lot that happened leading up to her death. So it was like,
from what I understand about, like, I know there's a difference between ghosts and spirits. I just can't think of it at the top of my head. So I'm sorry if I, like, get that incorrect, but from what I understand, I'll call them entities or energies, whatever. Depending on the trauma that they were suffering at the time of their death, that's kind of what determines whether they know if they're alive or dead.
Yeah.
And I think because she was so mentally ill and, I don't know, just suffering in general, I think that kind of caused... I mean, her family fucking killed her baby, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
She died waiting for him. I forgot to say that she spent all of her time, like, looking out the window at the water at the same spot that the ship washed up on.
Yeah.
She basically spent the last couple of months of her life waiting for him, and he never came, so maybe she's like, she's still alive
business.
And waiting for him,
right?
You know?
Right. That's her unfinished business.
Exactly. So there's a corner of the tapestry room that is a sitting cold spot. The cold spot doesn't move. It just hangs out in that one corner. Just chilling, which might have been Anne's corner. Who the fuck knows? Could have been the corner that the baby died.
Yeah.
Visitors have reported hearing the sound of a baby crying and seeing Anne herself in the mansion. And my last note, this one's pretty creepy. There's a photo that was taken at Loftus Hall of a young woman thought to be Anne with an older woman in the window. So Anne and this older woman were in the window and they're almost transparent. And I'll show you the picture.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it's online somewhere.
So they're in black and white.
Oh, I see.
Like,
okay,
they're
I see
very
one
transparent.
Figure, I see one figure on the right, and then is the little thing on the bottom.
That's
right
the hand. Woman's head.
Oh my gosh, that's such a clear picture.
Yep.
That's crazy.
And usually with shit like that, people try to debunk it real quick. And I haven't found anything about
it being fabricated or anything.
Yeah, like, photo analysts for a lot of paranormal stuff will analyze things and try to find anything wrong with it to see if it's been, the photo's been tampered with or edited or photoshopped in any kind of way. And usually shit like that gets debunked really quickly, but I haven't found any information that says this picture was in any way fabricated. So yeah, that's what I have on the Loftus Hall.
Wow. That's really interesting. You know what's so crazy about it too is like the woman who's in front of the like panel is like doing the same pose as the woman in the reflection, but it's not like it's not reflected. It's like they're both standing forward.
Yes, looking exactly. Forward. That's what the guy who took the picture had done an interview, and he's like, I thought it was a reflection until I realized they were looking the same way.
Same way, yeah. That's crazy. And wow, that was really interesting.
Wild. So
I really like that.
I thought
I like to believe that it was the devil.
I also like to believe that. I just have to satisfy the skeptics.
I just imagine her, like, I'm still picturing her, like, leaning down being like, who them hoofs? Who got hoofs here?
Seriously.
Boy, explain your hoofs to me. And he said, let me turn into a fireball and fly through the ceiling.
Yeah, I don't, because his whole, he had, like, entire goat legs. It wasn't just his feet.
Yeah.
So I'm like, girl, if you were having sex with this man, how are you not noticing?
Maybe, I also wonder if maybe, like, he was able to disguise himself and, like, when she was with him, that he disguised himself fully as human, and then he decided in that moment to reveal himself.
Yeah, that too. Because he could have, like, gotten the job done and been like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the devil also has, like, quite an ego and is, like, like, I imagine the devil is, like, a theater kid and is, like, look at this. Look at my fancy legs and feet. I'm the devil. And like, I'm not like make other a whole boys. Big show out of it.
Pick me boy. Like 1,000% yeah, pick me boy.
Pick me boy.
I think that's everything because I already thanked Mike.
I don't have anything to say.
I don't either. We both did good this week.
I'm proud of us. I liked your case a lot.
I have a good one coming next week. I started another paranormal one. And then you were like, hey, what do you think about doing 2 short ones? I was like, fuck yes. I do not want to do all this research right now.
Yeah. It worked out. I love you so much, but also I'm about to pee my pants. So
one of us always does.
Yes. So if you would like to follow us on Instagram, our Instagram is yourworstnightmaretcp. We post funny memes sometimes, and if you message us on there, we will most likely reply. We are also on Twitter, @NightmareTCP. I say this every week. I swear to God, I'm trying to do better. But if you DM me on there, I will most likely respond to you as well. Usually Audrey's on the Instagram. Yep. I'm on the Twitter. And we also have an email where you can tell us your listener stories if you've ever experienced anything paranormal or just have any stories relating to true crime, anything that we talk about on here, you can email us there, or you can just say hi. We love to talk to you.
Yes.
And that is yourworstnightmaretcp@gmail.com. And lastly, if you would like to contribute to our podcast in a way that is more than just rating us 5 stars, leaving a review, or listening, if you would like to give to us financially, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/yourworstnightmaretcp, and we will love you forever. You can become a Mothman
We already baddie. Love you forever, but...
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to sound like...
No, I know.
I didn't mean for that to sound like we don't love all of our listeners, because we do. We do, truly. But it... I don't know. I feel like if someone is also going through the effort to also donate and, like, do the extra stuff, it's like, wow.
Thank you. It means a lot to us.
Yeah, it does mean a lot. Not that... Yeah. We love all of you.
I think they get it. I did want to say really... Now. No, don't. It's fine. If they're... there are more offensive things that we've said on here than...
This is true.
Fuck off. I did want to say it really quick that Spotify does now do ratings for podcasts, so... Yes, so I already rated our podcast 5 stars on Spotify because, you know, I have just the worst ego. But... We would appreciate if you listen on Spotify instead of Apple, or if you don't have Apple, that you just give us a 5-star rating on Spotify if that's possible. So, with that being said, we will check in with you guys next week, and I hope you have a good week. Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you.